Parashat Balak. This parsha is really remarkable in that nothing that happens in this parsha makes sense to me. Right? The way I was taught and the way I understand what the Jews are doing in this world, nothing fits in. I don't understand why there has to be a prophet named Bilam, who is a non-Jew, and who seems to think that he can trick God, which didn't ever occur to me as being a quality of prophecy. The prophecy always seemed to be someone who was in keeping with God's desire, not somebody who is going to act against God. And not only that, in the story of Bilam, the way to overcome the heat is to say in your head, you have to just say, it's cool. And then everything is fine. That's the trick. You have to remember that 30 years ago, nobody had air conditioning. And they didn't do so badly. You know, even though I could tell you a story, when we came to Israel, there was a time when I was a candidate to become the rabbi of Tirat Zvi. Tirat Zvi, the kibbutz Tirat Zvi, is one of... So I was a candidate to become the rabbi in Tirat Zvi. As in many events in my life, my wife disabused me of this. I was going to do it because it seemed reasonable to me, right? Tirat Zvi is located in a place which in those days you could never get to. You had to plan for 2 days to get to the Tirat Zvi. What?
Great Duck Lake,
yes. And they have also fish ponds, which will probably interested you more than the Duck Lake. It was very hot in Tirat Zvi. In fact, it's one of the hottest places in the Near East besides Doha, where 50 degrees is very likely, but over 40 degrees was very common in Tirat Zvi. Tirat Zvi in the Emek Beit Shan, where Tirat Zvi is located, was in the olden times a winter resort. You know, people used to go there in the winter because it was warmer, and they all used to run away in the summer until the Jews came along and they said, we're staying no matter what. So I come to Tirat Zvi and I ask the old guys there, how'd you do it? How'd you work here? How'd you live here? This place is so hot. So they all said the same thing. You get used to it. There's a little breeze under a tree in the middle of the quad here, and you can take a shower. And what we did was, they told me they used to get up to work at 1 o'clock in the morning. They used to start working until 7. And then they'd go to Davin. And that was the end of the day. So then we came to Tirat Zvi. They already were putting in air conditioning in the tractors. So you asked the tractor guy, he said, how did they do it in the old days? Just a young guy. Those are the old guys who said, we figured out how to do it. The young guy said, they never made a penny. They couldn't work. It was impossible to do anything. It's the air conditioning that saved us. You know, we became an enterprise. And that's why I think they went into meat. Because when the meat is all in it's a refrigerator. The whole place is a refrigerator. Everybody wanted to work in Tirat Zvi. In any event. So that's what you do. You just think that you're in a refrigerator and everything is just fine. So Bilam is a remarkable story, none of which makes much sense. I mean, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to send an agent who is actually opposed to divine authority to bless the people of Israel and then to record it in the Torah? I mean, why? How could that make any sense? How could that make any sense at all? And so I don't want to get into all the different pieces. I just want to remind you, that Bilam accepted the challenge that Balak placed upon his shoulders. And he said, okay, I'm going to do it. At first Hashem said to him, don't go. And then Hashem said to him, do go, you can go. And this is a problem with understanding, you know, even, you know, in an unsophisticated way. I mean, what was it that God was doing? Why would he say no and then say yes? Because Bilam beseeched him. So, you know, there's a famous Ibn Ezra that sometimes God tells you what the right thing is. But then, if you exhibit or your free will action against that, then God allows you to go in the way that you choose and to naturally accept the consequences. So that's a famous Ibn Ezra. It says something about the situation in the world, right? People who know what the right thing to do is choose to do the wrong thing because they think it's a shortcut. You know, like, you know, you're not supposed to steal, but stealing is very attractive because it's a shortcut to other things, to making a lot of money. You don't have to work. So that's how people are. I want to just remind you that in the story of Bilam, he actually did it three times. He spoke to Am Yisrael three times. He spoke entirely four different times. Bilam, the prophet, four different times. The first two times he spoke, that was the attempt to curse B'nai Yisrael, which was unsuccessful the first two times. The third time, he already blessed B'nai Yisrael. And the fourth time, he acted very much like a prophet, the prophet that we know, or the prophets that we know about, and prophesied about the nations. Not just about Am Yisrael, but about the nations. So let's say it again. The first two times, Bilam was trying to do what Balak asked of him, to curse the Jews, and he was not successful, as we also know. The third time we would say that Bilam blessed the Jews. And the fourth time, Bilam was prophesied for the nations. It's as though the fourth time was a proof that he did not lose his power or his position as a prophet. I mean, here is a man who was a prophet, but he acted against God, right? He acted against God, and he said whatever he said, and he remained a prophet. Because the fourth time that Bilam speaks to the world, he's prophesying for the nations, and he's not lying. And the third time, he blessed the people of Israel. Now, we know that there is a notion in the halakha of a Navi Sheker. A Navi Sheker, right? I will tell you that there are just two prophets that you have to remember. One is Eliyahu HaNavi. One is Eliyahu HaNavi, who sacrificed on Har HaKarmel after the Beit HaMikdash was built. And that's Asur Midoraita. It was forbidden to give Korbanot outside of the Beit HaMikdash once the Beit HaMikdash is built. So Eliyahu HaNavi did it in order to show up Nevi'ei HaBaal at that time. So Nevi'ei HaBaal made a Mizbeach and sacrifices, and Eliyahu made a Mizbeach and sacrificed sacrifices, and the fire came down from heaven and consumed the sacrifice of Eliyahu HaNavi, proving whatever it proved. I mean, it didn't change much in Am Yisrael. It didn't change much in the problem that they had with dealing with Avodah Zorah at that time. But Eliyahu HaNavi was vindicated. And the halachic vindication is called Hora'at Sha'a. In other words, because Eliyahu Navi said, I'm doing it now, only for a specific purpose, and only for this time, and I don't mean that you should imply that there's a change in the halacha. That's called Hora'at Sha'a. You could sometimes do something for a specific purpose if you are confident or you make it clear that you're not changing the halakha, that this is something that happens only on a particular occasion. Or it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tatsadi Tesavit Beis, if I remember correctly. There's another, so Eliyahu Navi is vindicated even though he did something against the Torah. Now, Hananiah ben Azur, you know that name? Hananiah ben Azur was a Navi Sheker. He was a lying prophet. What did he lie about? Yirmiyahu Navi told the Jews that they would go into exile for 50 years. And Hananiah ben Azur said, no, 2 years, don't worry about it. You know, it'll come and it'll be gone before you notice. So Hananiah ben Azur is called a Navi Sheker. He's called a Navi Sheker. Now it's important to remember that a Navi Sheker, it's not that Hananiah ben Azur came and said something crazy. Like Yirmiyahu, who was certainly a prophet, said one thing, and Hananiah ben Azur said something else. But Hananiah ben Azur was a prophet. He was a real prophet who rejected prophecy. And because he rejected prophecy, he started telling lies. He started talking about things that God said that God had not said to him. So he's called a Navi Sheker. A Navi Sheker is not a person who lies. Right? A Navi Sheker is a Navi that adopted Sheker. I mean, I hope the difference is clear. I mean, anybody can lie. Anybody can say something crazy. Anybody can disagree with Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And they did. The people in his time, they all found him to be an alarmist. And couldn't understand what he was so excited about and worried about. What he was worried about led to the destruction of the temple. Right, Bayit Rishon was destroyed in the time of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. But they didn't understand that. But Hananiah ben Azur, the reason that he's called the Navi Sheker is because he was a Navi first. And then he became enamored with the Sheker. He wanted people to appreciate him, to like him, to like what he was saying. So he said things that made more sense. He didn't contradict Yirmiyahu 100%, but he contradicted him 95%. And that 95% was enough. That was enough of a contradiction to make him into a Navi Sheker. But the reason I'm telling you this is because Bil'am did not become a Navi Sheker. And this whole story, right, there's speech number one, and speech number two, and speech number three, where he was forced to compliment Bnei Yisrael. And then comes along speech number four. And speech number four is very much typical of prophecy. Because Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, and Yirmiyahu, I think, also spoke about the nations. I mean, in other words, there was always for Am Yisrael, there was always, and I don't mean to be rabbinic in this juncture here, but there was always this problem with the non-Jews to the north and the non-Jews to the south, and the north included the east, and the south included the Sinai, and this was always a problem. It was always a problem, and therefore the prophets of Israel were always speaking out about the nations that existed in the area, right? Bavel and Ammon and Moab and Mitzrayim and Lebanon. All of these nations were subjects of the prophet. The prophet talked about those things. So it seems to me that what the parsha says up to this point is that somehow Bilam retained his status. You know, he starts the story as a Navi, even though he kind of tries to fight against divine power and divine will. But he ends the story also as a Navi, even though he was not able to satisfy Balak by making by finding a way to get heaven to oppose the Jewish people, which was the whole idea of Balak. He wanted somebody who could intercede on his behalf with heaven in order to ensure that Bnei Yisrael would not be able to judge. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing is I wanted to look at these psukim, which are part of the third speech that Bilam makes, right? The third speech. The first two speeches are tries to curse, but it doesn't work out. He can't actually curse Bnei Yisrael. The third speech is the bracha, the speech of the bracha. So what is the bracha? You see, it's the second source on the sheet. Vayisa Bilam et Einav. This is a phrase that represents heightened awareness. And even, I mean, Bilam seems like he was a prophet. Right? Prophecy is a state of being that is not common, but that could be described. Right? That's they are called. It's like the description of Shmuel. Shmuel had a school for prophecy, Bnei HaNeviim. And so the Rambam says in Hilchot Yesodiyah Torah Perek Zayin, the Rambam says that anybody can prepare himself for prophecy. It doesn't mean that you will be a prophet, but you'll be an exceptional person. You know, if you study a lot of Torah and you have good midot and you watch your health and you do what it is that good people are supposed to do, so you could get to the point where you're a candidate for prophecy. I mean, you're not a prophet unless God bestows upon you. That's what the Rambam thought. God is to bestow upon you prophecy. But those people who are preparing to become prophets, according to the Rambam, are called Bnei HaNeviim. Right? They are the acolytes, the prophetic acolytes. They're studying to be that way. Right, which makes sense. So Vayisa Bilam et Einav means that there was some kind of spiritual awakening in him. Vayaret Yisrael shochein lishvatav, and he looks upon Yisrael, and Yisrael is shochein lishvatav. Shvatav, tribes. We know from the beginning of the book of Bamidbar that they camped according to tribes. That the camp in the desert, right, there were three tribes on each side, altogether 12 tribes. The Kohanim and the Levim were someplace in the middle near the Ol Moed. Vatehi alav ruach elokim. So there was some kind of a combination between Vayisa Bilam et Einav first, and then Vayar et Yisrael. That's also something that induced the prophecy. But the prophecy only came in the third part of the pasuk, but the Elav Ruach Elokim. Ruach Elokim is like an unknown force, so we don't know how to explain it, but we know what it means. It means that he underwent a change. He became a prophet. That was prophecy, unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, who was always ready for prophecy, right, according to the Chazal. Right, didn't have to do anything in particular to receive prophecy. Bilam was not like that. Bilam had to work at it. He had to work himself up into the state of prophecy. But the Yalav Ruach Elokim. Rashi says, "Vayisa Bilam et Einav." So Rashi doesn't understand why the Torah has to tell us again to say things about Bilam, to say things that almost sound like nice things. In other words, he had this capacity, to evoke a spiritual moment. He, Bilam. I mean, we don't want to say that. We want to say that Bilam was a bad guy. We want to say, like, it sounds like something. So Rashi, in the Rashi way of doing things, I quoted Chazal, but it's the Rashi way, Bikesh lachnis vahem ayin ra'ah. So he says, Vayisa Bilam et Einav. That was not Bilam going through a spiritualizing process, but it was rather Bilam giving them the heebie-jeebies, you know, like he looked at them
You know, there are people who could do that.
They're not prophets. But there are people who look at you and make you nervous, right? There are people. Everybody has met people like that. So this is what he said. I mean, I don't know what Rashi thought Ayin Ra'ah is, but I know that Ayin Ra'ah is like an idea that has lived with the Jewish people for the last 1,000 years at least, right? There's such a thing as an Ayin Ra'ah, and you want to stay away from it, right, somehow. Like, where is it exactly? Basically, he says, V'hare yesh lecha shalosh midotav, Ayin Ra'ah, v'ruach gvoha, v'nefesh rechava, ha'amurim lemala. Okay, we didn't print that Rashi, but let's go on to the next part. Shochein l'shvatav. Right, they are dwelling according to their tribes. Ra'ah kol shevet v'shevet shochein la'atzmo ve'einan me'uravin. He sees that each tribe has its own place, and they're not mixed together. The tribes are not mixed together. Einan me'uravin. Ra'ah she'ein pitcheihem mekuvanim ze keneged ze. And he saw that the openings of the tents, I mean, everybody's living in a tent, so every tent has an opening. You know, you get in and you get out. So he said, "Ein pitcheihem mechuvanim ze keneged ze." The doors, the openings of these tents, do not face each other. Shelo yetzitz letoch ola chaveiro, in order to prevent each family from looking into the tent of some other family. In other words, they were very concerned and wary of lashon hara. Shelo yetzitz letoch ola chaveiro. The last part of the pasuk is vati alav ruach elokim alav belibo shelo yekalane. So Rashi says, this is real. This alav belibo. It's not that he's going to say something that he doesn't want to say. He's going to say something that he does want to say. Alav belibo shelo lekalalam. So again, Rashi explains the three parts of the pasuk as follows. First, he wanted to give them the ayin hara, I guess thinking that even if God wouldn't grant him prophecy, ayin hara he could do. It's like you zap him with a zapper of some kind. And then he saw that they were shochein l'shvatav. He says they were living a living ethical community. And he knew that the ayin hara wouldn't work. It wouldn't work in that kind of community. And then the third part of the pasuk is vati alav ruach elokim, and he decided that he would speak positively about them. Alav belibo shelo yikalaleim. Okay, the next pasuk is vayisa mishalo vayoma. This is how it starts, right? The word mashal has an interesting history in the history of words, right? A mashal became a word. I mean, I don't know exactly what it means in the Tanakh. You know, like, it's very hard to know sometimes what words mean. But we know that when the Rambam says mashal, and other Rishonim say mashal, they refer to a code, like Shir HaShirim. We say Shir HaShirim is a mashal. What does that mean? It means that it looks like it's talking about the love between a man and a woman, but it's really talking about the love between God and Bnei Yisrael. And that's called a mashal. The Rambam uses two words, actually. Mashal u'melitza. He uses those two words. And both of them can be understood as being a code. The thing is, when something is a mashal, the coded meaning is the only meaning. That's what a mashal means. It's like SOS, you know, da 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 da. So the da 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 doesn't mean anything. It only means SOS. Well, is that clear or unclear? So if when Rabbi Akiva said, if all the Torah is Kodesh and Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodeshim, so what he meant was every pasuk in the Torah has a pshat and has a sod.
Right? There are different levels of interpretation, but Shir Hashirim doesn't have a pshat. There's no pshat, because the pshat is meaningless, actually, in terms of this interpretive concept. The pshat is meaningless. Only the decoded message is meaningful, that it's about God and Bnei Yisrael. So if it's about God and Bnei Yisrael, so that's called a mashal. But here, Bilam, all the things that Bilam said are called a mashal. And maybe that's because Bilam didn't really say what he wanted to say. Right? He was saying something else. So it's sort of like he was providing a code for him, his own message. Right? Instead of saying A, he said B. Right? So that's called, in the Torah, that's called a mashal. And then it says, Nu'um Bilam ben Be'or, Nu'um Hagever Shetum Ha'ayim. There's something wrong. He doesn't see. He doesn't see so well. Shetum ha'ayin. Just look at the beginning of Rashi. Eino nekura umotzei lechutz v'chor shalad nere'eh patuach. V'lashon mishnahu k'dei sheyistom v'yistom v'yigov. Rabboteinu amru, this is what we are interested in. Lefi she'amar umisparet rova Yisrael. Shakurish Bohu Yot Shave Umone Rivi Iyotehem Shel Yisrael Matai Tavo Tipa Shenolad Hatzadik Mimenu Amar Belibo Mishu Kadosh Umishartav Kedoshim Yistakel Bidivrei Adadvei Malalo Valdavar Zed Nismat E Nismat E No Shel Bilam. So that means, we don't have time, but you could see that according to Rashi, the words "situma ayim" take me to someplace else. They're not about now. They're not about what Bilam is doing. They're about whether he saw things properly or improperly in the past. Right? So he's called situma ayim, but it's not part of the story. So let's go back to pasuk Dalit. Dum shomea imre el Hashem machazeh shaday chazeh nofel gluy nayim. This is about Bilam, that he is machazeh, right? Machazeh chizayon. He sees things. Yechazeh nofel v'gluy nayim. Nofel v'gluy nayim. So Rashi has trouble with all of these words, and I'm going to skip them for now because I want to get to the next pasuk. And this is what he said. Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov mishkinotecha Yisrael. That's what he said. Right? Mishkinotecha. Ma tovu ohalecha. See the Rashi? Al shira'a pitcheihem she'inan mechuvanim zeh mizeh. That's ma tovu. Like, in other words, he saw it and then he said it. He saw it and then he said it. Mishkinotecha chanyotecha kedargumotargumo. The way you camp, the way you place yourself, davar acher ma tovu alecha, ma tovu ohel Shiloh ubeit olamim beyishuvam. Just like Shiloh and Beit Hamikdash, Beit Olamim is Beit Hamikdash, beyishuvan shemakrivim behem korbanot lechaper alehem, and that's what we say, the korban tamid. The korbanot, the two korbanot tamid that were given every day, were given to be to lechaper al bnei Yisrael for the last 12 hours, right? Besides all the other kinds of kapara that existed, this was also a kind of a kapara. The avkeshen charipim lefnei sheim mishkon. I'm sorry, mishkinotecha Yisrael. Rashi says, Avkeshem Charevim, even after the destruction of the temple. Next week is Shivas of Thomas, I remind you. The Fishem Mishkon Alehem, Mashkon Alehem, V'chorbanan Kapara Ala Nifashot. That's what he saw. He saw that the destruction of the temple is Kapara, it's atonement. V'chorbanan Kapara Ala Nifashot. And the destruction of the temple is atonement for the souls. Shenemar, Kala Hashem et Chamato, Kala Hashem et Chamato, Uvamek Kila, Kila Hashem et Chamato, Vayatzet Eish B'Tzion. That somehow, this is Bilam. this is Bilam talking, but it's something worth remembering, that according to what Bilam saw, what Bilam thought, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was atonement. So that according to Rashi, he saw that that Bnei Yisrael achieved a superior ethical position in the desert, and he also saw that the Mishkan, that the temple that Bnei Yisrael would build, would be a constant atonement for the sins that they would sin. So that not only were Bnei Yisrael now ethically superior, but they had this protection from heaven, ultimately, that they would always be superior. They would always have this ethical note. And even if the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, that destruction will be a kapara, will be an atonement on Bnei Yisrael, or for Bnei Yisrael. And that's the position that Rashi adopts in explaining.
But it's not exactly a mashal, because it has meaning for itself.
I didn't say that in the Torah. I said in the Torah, the word mashal must mean something else.
I see. Okay.
I don't know what the word mashal means, but later it developed into a word for code. It developed into a word for code. So I have two things left. There's the Ramban and Likutei Halachos, Rav Nosson. I think we'll try Likutei Halachos, because I don't think we have too much time. Likutei Halachos, you know, it's a very big work written by Rav Nosson of Nemirov, who was a Talmud of Rav Nachman of Breslov. Right? And it's quite an amazing work. It tries to connect halachic material with philosophical positions of Rav Nachman. That's what it purports to do. But it does more than that. It even creates halachic categories that the Shulchan Aruch didn't have. I mean, it's quite a remarkable work. And it's published in 10 volumes by the Breslover guys. I mean, there are no pictures. It's just like words. So it's quite something. So here it's...
No songs even?
No what?
No songs even?
You could get a disc with it and play music, Breslover music, while you're perusing the Svarim.
You don't have to even go to a store. You can get it on the street corner.
Yeah, that's right. Except when the Prime Minister of India is in town, you're better off if you have it at home. The street seems to be under foreign control. So in any event, that's why the title is Likutei Halachot. That's the name of the book. Choshen Mishpat. Right, that part of the Shulchan Aruch that is about personal damages and torts and things of that kind. And then he says, it's in the subdivision called Nizkei Shcheinim, doing damage to your neighbor, right? There are laws of damaging your neighbors. Siman Hei, Seif Gimel, I mean, it's hard to understand how he can get from Nizkei Shcheinim to Bilam and Balak, but he does it somehow. So this is what he says. Zeshekatal Katuv Vayaret Yisrael Shochein Lishvatav. Now he sees this as being a pivotal pasuk, this pasuk which is at the top of the sheet. Vayomer Moav el Ziknei Midyan. Vayar et Yisrael shochein l'shvatav. That's our pasuk, right? The pasuk that we just learned. Shochein l'shvatav. Upirish Rashi ra'a she'ein pitcheihem mechuvanim ze keneged ze. That's end quote of Rashi. Ki Bilam ratzalach nisbahem ayin ra'ah. This is also Rashi. Bilam wanted to do this. So this is how he starts off. Chas v'shalom. Ki Bilam keneged tikkun hatfilad kedusha. Oh, he says, who is Bilam? Who is Bilam? Bilam stands against the fixing of tefillah, the holy prayer. Now, what is it that he is talking about? He's talking about the fact that before the Churban, according to the Rambam, everybody davened by himself. There was no Shmona Esrei. There was no fixed prayer that we could just take off the shelf, go to shul, take off the shelf and daven. But everybody was able, and in fact did, daven on his own, say his own words, make up his own words. And he, Bilam, was keneged tikkun ha'tefillah dekedushah, that the Jews had this ability to daven. And that's called tefillah dekedushah. And Bilam was against that. Now, how does he know that? K'moshe amru rabotenu zichronam levracha al pasuk vayomer Moav al ziknei Midyan. That's the pasuk at the top of the page. Right at the beginning of the parasha of Bilam, it says, Vayomer Moav al ziknei Midyan. Right, what did they say to each other? So Rashi says, El ziknei Midyan. You see the Rashi? Halo me'olam ayu sonim zeh. What's more, how did Moab and Midian get together? They hated each other. And this is reported in the Pasuk in Bereshit, Amaket Midian, Bistei Moab, Shebao Midian al Moab, the Milchama. The Midianites came against the Moabites to fight in war. Ela Meiratam, but because they were afraid, Meiratam Shel Yisrael, Su Shalom, Minehem. This is Rashi. Because they were afraid, they were more afraid of Bnei Yisrael than they were afraid of each other. So they made peace for the time. Umar Moav litol etzami Midian. So that's okay. So now they're at peace. But how come the Moabites, who were bigger, went to ask advice from Midian? Kevan shera'u et Yisrael notzchim shalokim min hagolam. Since they saw Bnei Yisrael were winning in their wars, right, against Sichon, against Og, against Amalek. Shalokim in Haga Olam, that it was very uncommon that a ragtag bunch of freed slaves would be able to fight in battles and win. Amru, Manhigam Shel Elu Bimidyan Nitgadel. The leader of this ragtag group of Jews, Moshe Rabbeinu, he after all grew up in Midian. Nishal mehem, ma midato. So we'll go and ask the Midianites, what manner of man is this? Because they must know, since Moshe grew up in Midian, right? Slicha, ma midato. Amrulo, ein kocho ela bepeh. This Rav Nosson loves this. Ein kocho el bepeh, meaning, he's a Jew. He can talk. He talks. Ein kocho el bepeh. It means his power comes from his mouth. And so Amru af amu nebo alem adam. That's how they decided to hire Bilam, because Bilam's power was speech, because he was a prophet, and Moshe's power was also speech, because Moshe was a prophet. So now let's go back to Rav Nosson. Amru ein kocho ela befem, and the third line. Af anu nevoa lehem ba'adam shekocho befeh. That's Rashi. Up to now it's all Rashi, right? All of Rav Nosson is Rashi. Gira'a shatzvachat Yisrael rak al yedei tefillah. They understood that the success of Bnei Yisrael was through tefillah. Shekol tikuna al yedei emet. That fixing davening is connected to the truth. V'ratza lahavi et Bilam shekol kocho lehefechu bapeh. That Bilam's power was to create falsehood with his mouth. Lehefechu bapeh. שהיה מסתכל תמיד בעין רעה על כל אחד. He would always look for the bad in people, למצוא בו מום וחיסרון, in order to find a blemish and a lacking. והיה גומר בפיו התמא לרעה, and he would then use his mouth, his unclean mouth, לרעה, עד שהיה לו כוח לקלל ולהזיק חס ושלום. I would say in a more modern lingo that you have a choice when you look at a situation or you look at a person, right? Every person is complex. Like there are many aspects to that person. So if you are intent on discovering what is wrong, what is bad, what is unpleasant, what is unlikely, what is ungodly, you'll find it. That was Bilam. Bilam denied the truth of the possibility of goodness in the world. And that's Ayin Ra'ah, according to Rav Nosson. Ayin Ra'ah means you use your eye to discern Ra, to find the bad. Right? Everybody knows that you have a choice. You always have a choice whether to emphasize goodness or to kind of be overwhelmed by what seems to you to be something bad. And then he goes on. He goes on and he says, so by looking at the bad of things, he had the strength to curse. In other words, Rav Nosson is trying to explain how this could happen. Like, where is the flaw in the system that could allow Bilam to actually exist? Why didn't that Bilam just implode and disappear? And the answer is that Bilam had a skewed idea of what the truth is. For Bilam, the truth was getting together all the bad things that you could imagine about another person or another people and speaking only about them. Now, there is a certain kind of truth to that, but it's ayin ra'ah. It's something that is not going to provide us with a positive result. Shehaya mistakel tamid ba'ayin ra'ah kol echad limtso bo mum. I'm in the fifth line. V'chisaron. And that produces in him the strength to curse and to do damage. In other words, somehow Bilam fits into the system, because prophecy also demands an attitude. And Bilam had the wrong attitude. And the attitude that he had, which was wrong, was Ayin Ra'ah. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't do that. That it was not a possibility within the world that we know about. So he says, "Vayagomer adri yalo koch lekalel lechazik chaz v'shalom." Aval k'shara'ah she'ein pitchei Yisrael mechuvanim. When he saw that the doors of the tents were not facing each other, zeket egetzeh. We know that's Rashi, right? He's quoting Rashi without saying that he's quoting Rashi. Ki ze yadua sheikar achizata sitra achra. Everybody knows that ikar, the main, the way that sitra achra grabs onto you and makes you ra, right? You know, I mean, the people, religious people, have not been able to stop talking about ra. They just don't know where it comes from and why it's so exciting. So that's called Sitra Achra, the other side. Shehu machloket the Sitra Achra. Vehu mi machloket shebein Yisrael batzmam. Kshayesh chas v'shalom beinehem machloket. So he says this kind of machloket about what you see and what it is you look, that's called machloket, right? That's a machloket, Pirkei Avot said, shelo l'shem shamayim. A machloket l'shem shamayim is the machloket of Hillel and Shammai, right? That's machloket l'shem shamayim. The machloket l'shem shamayim is so good that even after they wrote the Shulchan Aruch, People went back to the Gemara to find the machloket, because the machloket is its own truth. Right? The machloket is its own truth, as Rav Nachman says, not here, but someplace else. Hu machloket shebein Yisrael ba'atzmo. So this is almost a lesson to be learned. That what is the machloket that we have sometimes with our own families, our own brothers and sisters, with our own people? What is the machloket about? It's about ayin hara'ah. It's about not seeing the total picture. It's about something that is very annoying to me. Something. There's something I can't let go of it. That's called a machloket. And that's what Bilam was doing in the Torah. Bilam was teaching us that in order to be a nation, we have to be able to deal with machloket. In order to be a people that has a more significant definition, I think that you could say that the Jews have managed to do that because they're still around. Albeit it's been a tough ride. I mean, nobody thinks it was so easy for the last 2,000 years, but we're still there. And we still have generally commitments to what being Jewish or living in the Jewish world means. And that's what Bilam came to tell us, that the ayin ra'ah, which everybody has this capacity to be annoyed, you know, like there are very few people who never get annoyed. I don't know if there are any people like that, but certainly only very few if there are. So he says, "Hu machloket shebein Yisrael ba'atzmam kishiyesh chas v'shalom beinehem machloket u'mistakel kol echad al chaviro l'ra'ah machmat she'ein tov be'einav ha'amat al chaviro." So in other words, this is what could happen. What could happen is that in Am Yisrael, amongst the Jewish people, they can't get along with each other. They can't maintain the uniformity of design and opportunity, because they tend to emphasize the wrong things. So this is what Bnei Yisrael were learning from Bilam. Right, we're learning from Bilam first that Bilam was looking for a way of cursing Bnei Yisrael. He would have found it. He would have been able to actually do it. It wasn't that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put words into the mouth of a silent prophet. Bilam knew that he could do it. It's just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped him. And why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu stop him, according to this analysis in Rashi? Because their tents were not facing each other. Because that particular fact was a contradiction to the Ayin Ra'ah, and was a way to ensure the unity of Bnei Yisrael. So spoken in another way, what did Bilam want to do? He wanted to look at Bnei Yisrael and say, there's no future here. They won't have a future. I mean, after all, he didn't think that he would curse Bnei Yisrael, they'd all drop dead on the spot. And besides which, Bilam had a much better idea. You know, at the end of the parasha, Bilam is the one who suggested that they send these the young girls, and you know, who would prostitute themselves and then convince the Jews to adopt idolatry, which actually worked. I mean, it happened. But Bilam was in for much higher stakes. He was not originally interested in making sure Bnei Yisrael would transgress, because they'd already transgressed. Right? There's the Chet HaEgel and the Chet of the Meraglim, and they're still around. They're still around, albeit maybe weakened, but they're still there. They're still there. So Bilam wanted to find a way to eradicate them. Something that Amalek tried but was unable to do. And what was his way, according to Rav Nosson? His way was Ayin Ra'ah. That if you redefine Am Yisrael in terms of Ra'ah, you only see the things that they did that were bad, then you will create Machloket, and the Machloket will ensure that there won't be a future for Am Yisrael. This, according to Rashi, according to where Rav Nosson understands it, this was prevented. This was prevented by the fact that Bilam saw that they could, that he could not create machloket, even the Ayin Hara, because of the way the tents were set up. And the people refused to look into each other's homes, and they didn't want to say, they didn't want to be involved or caught up with Lashon Hara. So Bilam realized that he couldn't do it, that his plan would not be, that his plan would not be effective. And therefore you could say, that's why the parash is written in the Torah. Even though with certain skepticism, the Gemara says, Baba Basra, it says, Moshe Rabbeinu Katav, Parashat Bilam. You imagine that? It's like somebody asked a question, somebody in the yeshiva said, what's this parasha doing here? I mean, it can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this. I mean, it's anti-prophecy, it's anti-God, it's anti-everything. So the Gemara says, no, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it. It's part of the Torah. There's no doubt about that. So Rav Nosson says, it's the most important thing in the Torah, because it's the way that we protect ourselves forever. You know, we will continue to exist. How we continue to exist? By avoiding machloket. What is machloket about? Machloket is always about something that can't be reduced to something very, very small. It's like much bigger than it really should be. That's a machloket shelo l'shem shamayim, and that's what Rav Nosson is talking about. Okay. Have a good Shabbos.